He got little opportunity to catechise me after this, for the first stage of our journey was in a cockly little fishing boat that took us out into the channel, and since it was hellish rough, I was in no condition for conversation. I was sprawled in the scuppers, wishing to God I'd gone back to London and faced the music, and I was still green and wobbly-kneed when at evening we came into a bay on the French coast and sighted Mr. Spring's vessel riding at anchor. Gazing blearily at it as we approached, I was astonished at its size. It was long and lean and black, with three masts, not unlike the clippers of later years. As we came under her counter, I saw the lettering on her side. It read, Balliol College. Ah, says I to Spring, who was by me just then. You were at Balliol, were you? No, says he, mighty short. I am an Oriel man myself. Then why is your ship called Balliol College? I saw his teeth clench.
Because I hate the bloody place, he cried in passion. My father and brothers were Balliol men. D'ye see? Does that answer you, Mr. Flashman?
Well, it didn't, but at that moment my belly revolted again, and when we came aboard, me retching and groaning and falling asprawl on the deck, I heard a voice say, Christ, it's Nelson. And then I was half carried away and dropped on a bunk somewhere, alone in my misery, while in the distance I heard the hateful voice of John Charity Spring bawling orders. But as I dropped off to sleep, I remember wondering, why does a British ship have to sail from the French coast? I spent my first few days in my bunk feeling damned ill. I saw four people and disliked all of them. The first was the ship's doctor, a big-bellied lout of an Irishman who gave me a draught for my seasickness, which made it worse, then staggered away to be ill himself. He was followed by a queer, old young creature with wispy hair who shuffled in carrying a bowl from which slopped some evil-looking muck. When I asked him who the devil he was, he jerked his head in a nervous tick and stammered, please, sir, I'm Sammy. Sammy what? No, sir, please, sir. Sammy Snivels, Captain calls me, but they calls me Loony, mostly. And what's that? Please, sir, it's a gruel. The doctor says for you to eat it, please, sir. And he spilled half of it over my cot. Damn you, cries I, and caught him a backhanded swipe that sent him half across the cabin. Take your filth and get out. Next man in was a nimble little ferret of a ship's boy with a loose lip and a cast in one eye. He gave me a shifty grin and sniffed at the spilled gruel.
Loony didn't have no luck, did he? Says he. I told him gruel wouldn't go down nohow.
I told him to go to blazes.
Feeling groggy, eh? Says he. Grub's no good to you, mate. Tell you what, I'll get in bed with you for a shilling.
Get out, you dirty little bastard, says I. I'd sooner have your great-grandmother.
Snooks, says he. You'll sing a different tune after 3 months at sea and not a wench in sight. It'll be two bob then.
I flung a pot at him, and he let fly a stream of the richest filth I've ever listened to.
I'll get Mr. Comber to you, you big black swine, he finished up. He'll give you what for.
And with that, he slipped out, thumbing his nose. Mr. Comber was the fourth of my new acquaintances. He was third mate and shared the cabin with me, and I couldn't make him out. He was civil, although he said little enough. But the odd thing was, he was a gentleman and had obviously been to a good school. He was about my age, tall and fair-haired, and too sure of himself to get on the wrong side of. I guessed he was as puzzled about me as I was about him, but I was feeling too poorly to give much heed to him. He didn't champion the cabin boy, by the way, so that worthy's threat had obviously been a bluff.